Thanks for listening to this Eastlake podcast. Everything we do is supported by the generous donations of our local and online community. If you love what Eastlake is up to, we'd encourage you to contribute by visiting eastlakecc.com. We hope you enjoy this week's message.
Happy Sunday, guys. Glad to have you. My name is Peter. Thanks for showing up and spending some time with us this weekend. Happy Pride weekend, everybody. What a good weekend. Yeah. On January 25th, 2015, Eastlake, this church, made a formal statement of inclusion for members of the LGBT community. No restrictions, no lid, fully welcome, regardless of your sexual orientation. And I didn't know this at the time, but Eastlake going through that has radically changed my life in an incredibly beautiful and positive way. I was on the team that was kind of landing on that decision. We were following Ryan's push for us to evolve and to not be fearful and to do what was right for us in our time. And I didn't know how much it would change my life for the better. And so I'm so thankful that we've gone through this transition as a community and that we exist and that we're thriving and that there's lots and lots of people that want to be a part of this. I do want to say to those of you who are a part of the LGBT community that are attending here today, or for those of you that are attending online, thank you. Thank you for your patience and your grace with us as we let go of worldviews that aren't loving. Thank you for teaching us how to love well. Thank you for teaching us how to become fully human. We are a better spiritual community because you are with us. So thank you so much for being a part of Eastlake. On our website, there's a statement. We don't really talk much about belief or agreement on belief. We say all the time here at Eastlake that we don't organize around, we agree about belief. But we do have some values and some things that we kind of hold on to help us organize as a community. And there's a download, if you go to our website, that is called What We Aspire to Believe. And this is one of the statements on there. I want to read it because I don't think you can read this enough. Here's what it says. As a community of people committed to being a benefit and blessing to the world, we welcome all persons to participate in the life of our community without limitation or restriction based on gender, race, ethnicity, age, physical or mental capacity, education, sexual orientation, gender identity, and socioeconomic or marital status. I want to be a part of that kind of church. Do you want to be a part of that kind of church? I hope so. Good. I hope so. I'm hopeful today that we can be filled with pride. We can be proud of Eastlake, this spiritual community, and proud of the legacy that we're going to pass on to our kids. I know I am very proud to be an Eastlaker, so much so that I wore my Coldplay shirt today, which is in and of itself an act of bravery if you're not a Coldplay fan. So, but anyways, I'm excited to jump in today. This is a talk today continuing the series called Evolve, and I'm a parent of three kids, and I've been getting some fascinating questions, and we've been having some interesting conversations in our household recently. Three kids. Tess is five. This is a picture of Tess. Joel is three, and our littlest, Marshall, just turned one. As you can tell, they're all chips off the old block. They all look just like their dad. Some vision challenges, but they're wearing my glasses, for those of you that didn't connect that. But lots of questions, lots of interesting conversations, specifically from my 5 and 3-year-old. Tess has been asking lots of questions about death. Joel has been talking a lot about poop and pee. It's been like some deep philosophical conversations. I get the chance to help Joel on Friday, Saturday, my days off. I get to help Joel go to the bathroom. And the other day, he's going potty, trying, making an attempt, solid effort. And he says to me, "Dad, we don't flush our farts, do we?" And I was like, "No, we don't flush our farts. Maybe we should. Maybe we should start that." It was just an interesting thing to hear, so I just wanted to share that with you. It doesn't have much to do with the talk. But I thought that was just a great sentence. I want to have that sentence around me. My five-year-old has been asking all these questions about death because I'm the spider killer in our family. She had a pet moth the other day that was, I had the opportunity to put out of its misery because this poor thing was not gonna survive much longer, and I was feeling like it was inhumane to keep that moth in my five-year-old daughter's hands. But she's just asking questions about death and what happens when you die? Why do people die? Why do moths die? Do squirrels die? And I'm putting her down a couple weeks back, and she asked the question, "Dad, what happens when you die?" And I thought, what a great question. And I did what any good parent said would do. I said, "I don't know. What do you think happens when you die?" Right? Just volley it back to her. And she said, "Is it a mystery?" And I said, "Yeah, Tess. Nobody really knows what happens when you die. There's lots of thoughts out there about what happens when you die, but nobody really knows. It is a mystery," she says. "Just like God is a mystery." And at this point, I was like, yes, like God is a mystery. What a beautiful idea. I mean, clearly my daughter is like advanced for her age. How could she know this? How could she intuit this idea at such a young age that she knows already that, I mean, how could we fathom the unfathomable, right? And so I said, "Yes, Tess, God is a mystery. How did you know that?" She says, "Because you told me that." And I realized in that moment that my daughter hadn't intuited much at all. She just was parroting back to me what I told her was true. This is what kids do. They recite back to their parents what we tell them is true and is real and is the framework for their existence. And I came across this quote that reminded me of that tendency in all of us. This is the quote. It says, "The history of the universe is in every one of us. Every particle in our body has a multi-billion year past. Every cell and every bodily organ has a multi-million year past. And many of our ways of thinking have multi-thousand year pasts." Many of our ways of thinking have multi-thousand year pasts. Just like my daughter was reciting back to me what I told her was true about God. Most of us do that. Most of our beliefs are simply us reciting back to others what somebody else told us was true. Most of our beliefs are actually agreements. We too parrot back what we've heard and what we've agreed to as true. And as we've been in this series called Evolve, some of you might be wondering, okay, why evolve? What's the topic evolve? What does evolution or evolving, what does that have to do with Christianity? What's the connection point there? And this talk today I think will be interesting. It's a little bit different than some of the other talks that I've given. I think there's some academic sections to it, and so I do want to just kind of create a little disclaimer right at the beginning. I know it's summer. I know you're thinking that I can't wait to go out and barbecue, and you're gonna barbecue, I promise, but I want everybody to put on their thinking caps today and to hang with me, because I'm gonna throw some science at you today. I'm gonna throw some data at you today. I'm gonna throw some quotes at you today, but I promise at the end, I'm gonna try to wrap it and help it make sense and apply it, but I need you all to kind of work with me as we kind of move through a new topic today. Today's topic is evolutionary Christianity. I'm trying to answer the question, what does evolution have to do with Christianity? What does evolution have to do with spirituality? Hopefully today this talk can be kind of an evolutionary Christianity 101. So, you still with me? Everybody get their thinking caps on-ish? Try your best, okay. I'm gonna give you a definition. This is a definition that I am writing down, I made as I understand evolutionary Christianity. It's gonna be up on the screen. Here's a definition of what evolutionary Christianity is. It is a framework that unites our evolutionary story with our Christian heritage. Evolutionary Christianity is a framework that unites our evolutionary story with our Christian heritage. I shared a few months back in a talk I gave called Count Me In, that every human, kind of central to what it means to be a human, is we long for a couple things. We need a tribe and we need a story. We need a group of people to be with, a group of people that will say, you belong, you're in. Humans need that. And humans also need a story, a framing narrative that will help us make sense of our life, a system of belonging and a system of meaning. In the scriptures, Moses, the famous prophet and leader of the Old Testament, he was constantly reminding the Hebrew people of their story, Remember where you came from, just like Mufasa, okay? Remember who you are. That's a Lion King reference, okay? Not the Bible. Moses was reminding the people of Israel, don't forget your story. Don't forget where God brought you from. We need framing stories because when we, you know, whatever story we align with is going to influence the decisions we make. If the story that you choose is one of victimhood, you will become a victim. If the story that you choose to align with is one of overcoming hardship, then you will live as an overcomer. If the story you choose sees life as filled with purpose and meaning, you will live an intentional life. And if the story you choose sees life as random and existentially insignificant, you will make decisions as if nothing you do matters. The story that you choose becomes your life. And what's interesting about living in the 21st century is, relative to human history, there's a new story in town. About 150-ish years ago, a guy by the name of Charles Darwin proposed the story of evolution. He said, "You know what, guys? I think evolution is actually the story. Do you want to know where you came from? Do you want to know where we're going? Evolution answers that story." At the time, it was very controversial. He got criticized, and even today, there are still critics of his ideas, critics of his theories, people who confuse the fact of evolution with certainty about how evolution came about. But Darwin's idea of evolution said that over millions of years, humans evolved from single-celled organisms, that we have evolved. That is our shared heritage. This quote kind of speaks to that from Neil Campbell. He said, "Today, nearly all biologists acknowledge the fact of evolution, that evolution is a fact. The term theory is no longer appropriate except when referring to the various models that attempt to explain how life evolves. It's important to understand that the current questions about how life evolves in no way implies any disagreement over the fact of evolution." Meaning, scientists are saying, this is it, guys. Evolution is the story. Evolution is our story. That's where we came from. And for many of us, to say that evolution is a fact is not controversial. We live in a progressive area. We live in an area that values education, that embraces science. However, I do know that this idea that evolution is a fact might be challenging for some of us. I grew up in a heritage that said that evolution had been disproven. That's not true, actually. But the idea that evolution was our story was in conflict because the Bible said something different, right? In my tradition, we had a very literal interpretation of the creation accounts in Genesis. We did not view them as poems. We viewed them as science, a scientific text that we can trust. So maybe if you have more of a religious framework, the idea that evolution is our story might be a harder pill to swallow or something that you aren't comfortable acknowledging. I do think it's important to say that when scientists position evolution as a fact, they're not saying that evolution means meaningless blind chance is what brought us here. Think of it as the way we do email. I'm assuming you guys have heard of email. Anybody heard of email? Okay, good. You're still with me. Email, we download it every morning, right? We get our email and it comes in randomly. There's randomness to how we receive our email. But what's ordered and what is driven or sorted is what we do with the emails that we receive. So in my family, when I get an email, the family stuff goes to my wife. The Eastlake stuff gets worked on Mondays. I get a lot of my emails. I send out emails to guests and respond to emails that come from people who are part of our community. The golf stuff goes into a special folder for when my kids are out of diapers and I get to think about golf again. The spam, all those annoying emails that you and I get, those get deleted, hopefully even filtered out before they get to my inbox. There is randomness into how I receive my email, but what's far more important is my propensity to sort my email by function and discard anything that isn't helpful. This is what Darwin proposed as natural selection. Nature's sorting process for what isn't helpful. If it's helpful and it helps an organism reproduce and survive, that gets passed on. Not all the time, but often enough to serve as a shaping force over millions of years. Variations that aren't helpful, that don't help an organism survive and reproduce, those tend to get deleted or sorted out. So, evolution does not mean that there is no room for intention, that there's no room for purpose, that there's no room for even potentially consciousness, what many of us would say or describe as God. And what we must recognize is that each field of study, each field of thought, brings a different thing to the table. They provide different answers, different languages to describe reality. We need science to give us data and evidence to tell us what the facts are. Scientists create the sandbox of reality that we get to play in. But philosophers, theologians, they help us know what the evidence means. We need both. Science gives us data. Spirituality gives us meaning. We need both of those to live as healthy humans. They work together. They're not in competition. In the Greek, it was called mythos and logos. Mythos, mythic, narrative, story, meaning. Logos, facts, data, evidence. Even we understand it when we're growing up in grade school. We need both math and poetry. Math and reading. Math, 2 + 2 = 4. You need that to survive and function well. But you also need poetry. 2 roads diverged in a wood, and I took the road less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. 2 + 2 = 4 is true, and so is that poem by Robert Frost. Those are both true, different languages to describe reality. And so, evolution, based on what the data says, is our story. That's what scientists are saying is how we got here. And so in light of that, assuming that to be true, just for the remainder of our time here, I want to share a couple other things that this scientific community is saying about our universe. Some other building blocks about reality, and I'm going to share why at the end. But I really think it's important that we think through this evidence that's coming in. What are we learning about our universe, and how might it inform our theology? If science gives us evidence, how does that change and reframe and help us reimagine our images, our metaphors, the language that we use to describe God? If this is interesting to you, I'm kind of a nerd. I mean, I got the glasses, it's obvious. If this is interesting to you, there's a lot on here. A couple resources I want to recommend. The book Thank God for Evolution by Michael Dowd. Almost all the thoughts that you'd like from this talk are from his book. I really liked it. It helped reframe and redeem so much of my Christian heritage, so I definitely recommend that. If you're more of a YouTuber than a reader, there's a video you can watch by Rob Bell called Everything is Spiritual Too, and he talks a lot about some of these similar ideas. And then, of course, we had Bruce Sanguin here a few weeks back. His book, The Way of the Wind, is a great book. Another one, The Universe is a Green Dragon, another great book, kind of all in this idea of evolutionary spirituality. So, a couple other ideas I want to share about science before we talk about implications. Number one, our universe is made up of holons. Turn to your neighbor and say, holon. Our universe is made up of holons. What is a holon? There's a definition up on the screen there. A holon is a whole that is also part of a larger whole and is itself composed of smaller holes. Crystal clear. I think that's pretty simple. Let me say it again. A holon is a whole that is also part of a larger whole and is itself composed of smaller holes. Holes with a W. Okay. The easiest way to think of a holon is a nesting doll. Another way of saying that our universe is made up of holons is to say our universe is nested. There's a nested structure to our universe. This is what the science, the data, the evidence is saying to us. Everything is a part of something bigger and is made of smaller components nested within it. This is a Ken Wilber idea, the idea of holons. We as humans, if this is the human in our metaphor, we are holons too. Within humans, we find organs and tissues and molecules and particles and subatomic particles. And outside of the human, above the human, bigger than the human, we form families and societies. We live on planets, within solar systems, within galaxies, within universes. And understanding the nested nature of our universe, if this is true, If it's true that we live in a nested or holonic universe, we could see, if we just interpreted this data as reality, we could see that this could start to inform our theology. Because some of us grew up with a framework that God is a being separate, out there, way far away from us, outside of our universe. If we view science as speaking to us today, if we view our universe as nested, that might inform how we view God. None of the ancient texts that spoke to God, that used metaphors to describe God, were written when we had the term holon. All of the ancient texts were written in eras where the earth was flat. And most of the planets, the moon, the ocean, the sun, those were all considered deities. That was the era in which the ancient texts came about. If our universe is made up of holons, we could consider the idea that God is the largest nesting doll. God is that which has no part greater than God. God is the largest of the nesting dolls. This is sometimes when you hear at Eastlake people who are teaching say God or the universe. It's because depending on your background, universe might be helpful language, more helpful language, because God as a being might not make sense to you. Maybe you view God as the largest nesting doll in a universe that is made up of holons. But if our universe has this nested nature to it, that starts to inform how we think about God, how we understand God. Second aspect is that our universe is expanding. Our universe is expanding in a couple significant ways. Faster than the speed of light, our universe is doing some important things. It's growing in greater diversity and complexity, more variety and novelty over time. Our universe has moved from atoms to molecules to cells to multi-celled organisms to humans who have now created democracies, satellite communication, and the internet. If the 14 billion year history of our universe were one single day, humans showed up at 11:58-ish p.m. So in terms of human history, humans are a very new species in this universe that's evolved. And if you look around, you can tell that over time, over this long span of time, things have gotten increasingly diverse and increasingly complex, more variety and novelty over time. It has taken a long time to produce something as unique and complex as the human, but we keep moving that direction. The universe is expanding in diversity and complexity. It's also expanding into awareness. Creatures seem to be appearing over time with larger spheres of potential consciousness. Consciousness is that part of you that knows you're awake, knows you're alive. You know you're a you. You're the only species on the planet that has language, that has as much proliferation as the humans have. You have awareness of yourself. You know that you're a human. You know that you're mortal. You know that you are in Bothell, Washington right now. That's called consciousness. You have more consciousness than a horse. I want to congratulate you on that. Horses have more consciousness than turtles. Turtles have more consciousness than amoebas, single-celled organisms. It seems as if we're growing in consciousness. We're also expanding at greater speeds of change, meaning it seems as if things are moving faster. Breakthroughs are happening more quickly. It seems as if we're standing on shoulders and shoulders and shoulders, and therefore things are happening at a greater speed. It's funny to think about, just 12 years ago, there wasn't a social network. Then some guy named Tom invited you to be his friend on MySpace. Now the average person, something that nobody did 12 years ago, the average person spends 90 minutes a day on a social network. Things are changing. A decade ago, you didn't have a smartphone. You were printing out maps on MapQuest. The good old days, right? Now we have Google Maps. That's only a decade ago. It took millions of years of human history and then 1,903 years for humans to take flight. And 66 years later, we were on the moon. Things are happening more quickly. We're advancing more quickly. It's estimated that within 30 and no more than 100 years, we will have full artificial intelligence. That's what they're estimating right now. Things are moving quickly. Don't get scared. Don't think on that too long. Okay. Lastly, The universe is expanding toward greater intimacy with itself. Toward greater intimacy with itself. When the first eye developed and the first ear developed, it was literally the universe seeing and hearing itself for the first time, thus becoming more intimate with itself. Humans, you are not living on the earth. You are a byproduct of the earth. The earth, because of its environment, has created a you. You can't live apart from the earth. When people go to space, what do they wear when they're up there? Earth suits. Suits that trick them into thinking their body is on the earth. You cannot separate yourself from the earth. You are intimately connected to the environment that the earth is in, and the earth is in the universe, so you're intimately connected to that as well. This is what we're learning about our universe, that it's expanding in these four ways: complexity and diversity, awareness, speed of change, and intimacy. So, what does this have to do with our spirituality? Number one, an evolutionary framework unites science and spirituality. An evolutionary framework unites science and spirituality. In the information age, in the age where the majority of us would accept what I just said as fact, it is basically untenable to ignore science. We need a story that merges ancient wisdom and truth with our modern understanding of evolutionary history. It's no longer reasonable for you to ignore science. That's probably why most of you go to this church. You're looking for a community that is reasonable in the 21st century. But interestingly, it's also been shown that humans that believe in God or some sort of spirituality tend to live better lives. Humans that have some sort of meaning, some sort of purpose, some sort of spiritual higher power view of the universe tend to live longer, happier, and live with a sense of purpose. So a purely materialistic worldview doesn't really help us click forward or evolve well either. Besides, when you think about it, what force do we think is propelling the universe in that direction? In the direction of greater awareness, in the direction of greater complexity, in the direction of greater intimacy and greater speed of change? What force is driving that? Why isn't the universe slowing down? Why isn't the universe becoming more simple or breaking down into less complex parts? I am perfectly comfortable calling that force God. There's plenty of mystery in science, and I'm more than comfortable calling or labeling that divine or labeling that with God language. That force, I think, is what's propelling us forward. We need to work to bring these stories together, science and spirituality, looking for where they're saying the same thing. Where does the data back up what spiritual leaders have intuited for centuries? That is what evolutionary Christianity is looking for. Number two, knowing our evolutionary story helps us filter out regressive religion. Knowing our evolutionary story helps us filter out or evolve past or delete spam folder, sort out regressive, unhelpful, backward religion. As I've embraced the big story, our 14 billion year history, evidence that shows that we've grown more diverse, more complex, more aware, it has helped me release my need to defend parts of my religious heritage that are indefensible. It has helped me release my need to protect parts of my religious heritage that feel backwards and feel regressive. So rather than needing to defend a God who occasionally commands genocide in the Bible, I can allow these verses to be what they are: ancient people describing their ancient experiences in ancient language. I can let them be in their proper time and place. As Stan Mitchell said a few weeks ago, the Bible becomes my traveling diary of my ancestors, how they understood the divine in their time and in their place. Or another example, instead of worshiping a deity that's outside of our universe that demands blood, a God that either had to kill me or kill Jesus in order to be in relationship with me, I can now understand that as an ancient framework. They had a less evolved framework than we have today. They knew less than we know now. Those are ideas that were rooted in a certain time and a certain place. And when I look at those examples, those stories, without them needing to be literal or prescriptive, I can see that in the Jewish tradition, like in all major religions, atonement is a big deal. Atonement, the sacrifice for sin, the making humans one with the divine. That's a big deal in most all religions. And I can, when I don't need it to be prescriptive or literal, I can look at it and I can think, well, animal sacrifice, that's definitely a click forward from human sacrifice. I'm glad that they evolved towards that. And then after animal sacrifice, we have what the scriptures, how many people interpret the scriptures, Jesus' sacrifice on the cross. And that's a click forward from having to regularly do animal sacrifice over and over and over again. Jesus dies once and for all, we're done with that. I can view that as a click forward and helpful in that time in human history when you needed a God that demanded blood, but I don't have to embrace or require that for my current framework because a God that demands blood sounds ancient. It sounds backward. It sounds potentially regressive. I know that in saying that, I might have created some tension for us, but what we know now about the human mind, what we're learning now about the human brain today in light of our evolution, the human struggle with imperfection and separation, that is rooted in what we know now as consciousness. You right now have all the benefits of consciousness and all the cons, all the downsides of consciousness, meaning you have a prefrontal cortex. You have the most evolved brain out of any species on the planet. That's a big win for us, okay? But one of the downsides of having a prefrontal cortex is that we feel separation. We know what imperfection feels like. And that, in my opinion, or my theory that I think makes the most sense, is where atonement theories came out of. Grizzly bears, they don't feel shame and regret like humans do. Bears don't stay awake at night replaying their mistakes. They don't feel shame and regret for cheating on their bear spouses or struggle because they missed that salmon. I'm the worst bear ever. How could I have missed that salmon? What a loser bear, the salmon that got away. We're laughing because it's absurd. Knowing what it's like to get it right and then getting it wrong, that's a human problem that's rooted in the most evolved brain on the planet. Our universe is teaching that you aren't separate. There is no separation. We are intrinsically connected. We are united. We are one. We are a part of an ecosystem. Even the scriptures, there's sections of the scriptures that speak to this. Paul taught that nothing can separate us from the love of God. Paul said that in God, we live and move and have our being, that you are operating in God right now, the biggest nesting doll. Jesus taught the prodigal son, and the prodigal son thought he was a slave, but he wakes up to realize that he was never a slave. He was always a son. We are intrinsically linked. We are connected to the divine. Separation is not something that needs to be contractually changed. The great evolutionary story serves as guideposts for us to interpret our religious heritage. And then number three, we can embrace God's continued revelation. We can embrace God's continued revelation. Lastly, we can learn that God's revelation isn't something that happened in our history. God's revelation is ongoing. God's revelation is happening right now. We are bearing witness to God's revelation. I grew up learning, and Stan Mitchell spoke to this a few weeks ago, that God's revelation basically stopped after Jesus. That the primary revelation of God occurred once and for all in Jesus, and then some sacred texts were written down decades after that, and then they were canonized a couple hundred years after that, and then God got out of the revelation business. God was gonna judge us based on how well we interpreted and how much we believed the revelation that happened in ancient history. That's the narrative, the story that I was told. In light of our evolutionary framework, we can trust that God is still revealing things to us now. Just this year, we learned that there are 10 times more galaxies than we previously thought. We're now estimating at least 2 trillion galaxies in our universe. I love what Dowd, Michael Dowd again, the author of Thank God for Evolution, he kind of explains a couple different ways of seeing revelation. He talks about private revelation and public revelation. Private revelation is gonna be defined for us up here. Claims about reality that arise primarily from personal experiences. Private revelation are claims about reality that arise from personal experiences, mountaintop experiences. God told me, therefore you should do this. I went to Bible college and that happened pretty frequently. God told me that I'm supposed to marry you. Interesting, God hasn't told me that. That's an interesting thing, right? Now, not all private revelation are as silly as the example I just gave. All of the scriptures came out of private revelations. God told me to write this down. This text is now inspired. And to be clear, many of these private revelations are compelling. Many of them contain great truth that's transcendent and lasts for a long time. That's why they've lasted for so long. But the key thing about private revelation is that they can either be believed or not believed. They cannot be known. Private revelations can either be believed or not believed. They cannot be known because they are one person, one time, unique events in human history that happened hundreds, often thousands of years ago. They cannot be empirically verified. On the other side of the spectrum from private revelation is public revelation. Public revelation is a modern method by which we collectively access and expand our understanding of the nature of reality. Key word there is collectively. Humans working together to discover, improve, critique, clarify reality. I love this quote from Kevin Kelly that speaks to what public revelation or science does. Science is the structuring and organization of knowledge such that it can be tested, archived, restored, communicated accurately, built upon, and extended, and such that new varieties can easily appear. Most importantly, science is how knowledge is structured so that it can be structured further. Public revelation is the collective work of humanity, proposing ideas, proposing theories, then critiquing, improving, validating, verifying that this indeed is the universe that we're living in. Public revelation, here's the key, can be known. In our time in human history, we call them facts. Public revelation is what we call facts. And I think when I just imagine that we get to live in 2017, we get to live in this era, post-Enlightenment, what a privilege it is to live in this era. The Enlightenment was the 1600s, 1700s. Did you know that the lifespan before the Enlightenment was age 40? And today the lifespan for most humans is age 70? The Enlightenment gave you 3 decades of your life. What a privilege it is to be alive today. And the Enlightenment gave us new language, an evolved way of describing our reality. Science that allows us to know things. We don't have to believe in the moon god or the goddess of fertility. We can know what gravity is and we can know what contributes to reproductivity. Science, public revelation, is a privilege that we get to operate within. And this means that in our era, we don't have to be religious believers only. We can also be religious knowers. I love what Dad says, that facts are God's native tongue. Whenever a fact gets proposed and verified, we can trust that as God's revelation in our time. God's speaking to us in our time. Facts are God's native tongue. As I've journeyed in my faith, I have grown increasingly interested in what key ideas keep showing up in all of the fields of study. What does science say? What does biology say? What do evolutionary scientists teach? What do psychologists, sociologists, and spiritual leaders, what do they all agree about? Whatever they're agreeing about, whatever they're all saying the same thing, that to me sounds like God's revelation, God's public revelation in our time. So, there's some thoughts for you. Who the heck cares? How does this impact your day-to-day life? What do you do with this idea, this kind of introduction to evolutionary Christianity? I love this quote by Albert Einstein. He said, "No problem can be solved by the same kind of thinking that created it." No problem can be solved by the same kind of thinking that created it. I'm not sure if you've noticed, but we humans still have a few problems that we need to solve. We still have some areas of growth, some areas that we could improve in when it comes to empathy and compassion and love. Our religions, our images of God, our approaches to reality and belief need to evolve. Traditional exclusivist religions, religions that claim to have the corner on truth, religions that require certain beliefs with the threat of torture and hell, framing stories that promote shame and separation, that label human beings as intrinsically separate from God unless they do something to earn that, whether it's prayer or whether it's some kind of formal agreement. Those types of thinking are not helping us evolve forward as a species. Those worldviews are built on fear, not built on love. And I know this talk had a lot of science and academic stuff to it. My hope today was to introduce you to the idea of a holon and to remind you that your universe is expanding in certain key areas and to hopefully encourage you to view science as God's public revelation in our time. These ideas to me don't undermine God to me. They don't undermine the significance of Jesus to me. They actually elevate God and Jesus to me. They improve, they reframe, they help me understand better my Christian heritage as a result. Because if evolution is how God creates, if evolution is the way, the method that God creates psychologically, culturally, socially, biologically, then that means that God is still creating something. God is still moving. God wants to do something in us as a species and you as an individual. And if that's true, and that just sounds more likely to me, that God is still evolving us, God is still moving us forward, wouldn't that be good news if that's true? Wouldn't that be beautiful news? Wouldn't that be hopeful and helpful that we have room to grow and that we're moving forward? We're learning as humans how to become humanity. Wouldn't that be a beautiful story for us to live out? I mean, do we really want to believe that 2,000 years ago, God spoke once and for all, and he just kind of sat back and was waiting for us to either believe or not believe that till the afterlife? I think the idea of God continuing to evolve us is such a beautiful and hopeful picture, a framing narrative that will empower and inspire us to live well and to evolve forward in our time. For some of us today, this talk is really encouraging because you have embraced science for a long time and it kind of validates that that type of thinking is healthy and good and helpful for humanity. For others of us, maybe this talk makes you a little nervous. Maybe it makes you wonder, what's my authority? How do I make decisions? It's more complex when you have this worldview, I get that. For some of us, maybe it makes you not feel Christian enough. But just remember, we follow Jesus, the Jewish rabbi. The goal isn't to be Christian. The goal is to become love. That's the goal. That's what the Christ path is, to become love. And we need a framing narrative, we need a story that will help us do that. I hope all of us today can be challenged to reflect on your worldview, the story that you've aligned with, the story that you've acknowledged as fact. Is that story producing love in you? Is it producing compassion for the other? Is it producing connection to your fellow human beings and to the earth that we live on? If it's not producing those fruit, we need to question those things. Remember, you can lose your view of God and not lose God. Just because you lost your view of God doesn't mean you lost God. It means you've grown, it means you've changed, it means you've evolved. And it seems, based on the data, that God's in the evolution business. He's been doing this for 14 billion years. You're not the exception. You too need to evolve. So hopefully that's true for us today. Would you stand with me? Let's send us out of here. Thanks for being here today. Congratulations on 1 hour of air conditioning-ish. It's kind of warm in here, I gotta be honest. We gotta get outside. May we today be reminded that God's still in the revelation business. May you leave today reminded of what's going on in our universe and with confidence to embrace that as fact and reality. And more than anything, like every week at Eastlake, may we be reminded to question our worldview, to reflect on how we think, to question how we approach reality so that it may produce love and hope and peace and light, life, and love for others. So thanks for being here today. Have a great week.